Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. It's Wednesday, October 20th, 2021. Let's get to the docket. Is the hunt for Brian Laundry over? Barry Morphew goes on the offensive. Larry Migliette arrested for the disappearance of his wife some 9 months ago. A congressman's been indicted. R. Kelly gets ready for round two. Nicholas Cruz, the Parkland shooter, well, he pleads guilty. A babysitter kills a mother, and then our dumb criminal contestant of the day. Let's talk about it. Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. My name is Scott Reich, and this is Crime Talk, the most fact-driven, unbiased, true crime channel. That's right. Today is Wednesday, October 20th, 2021. Before we get to the doc today, a couple of quick reminders. If you haven't done so already, would you hit the subscribe button, hit that little bell so you receive notifications of when we go live or put up new content. We want to thank everybody that joined us live last night, and while we were live, that's right, some big news broke regarding Barry Morphew. We'll talk about it here in the docket, but you would have known about it last night if you were with us. Now remember, if you can't watch us on YouTube, you can download this episode as well as every episode on your favorite app for a podcast. Just simply type in Scott Reich Crime Talk or Crime Talk with Scott Reich and you will find it. All right, let's do a quick Now, real quick, before we get to the docket, let's hear from the sponsor of today's program. Sundance Now is an ad-free streaming service that now offers the best of true crime series, dramas, and thrillers from all over the world for as low as $4.99 a month. Sundance Now is full of binge-worthy shows, which is great, so I always have something new to watch. It seems like I've watched everything of interest on streaming platforms in the last year and a half, so it's great that there's a new platform that has weekly releases of hundreds of shows from around the world that can't be found on any other platform. Sundance Now is available commercial-free for just $5.99 a month. Now, I watch Sundance Now at home with my Apple TV, and you can easily stream Sundance Now by downloading the app or streaming via Apple and Android devices, Amazon Fire TV, Google Chromecast, and Roku. Now, currently, we're watching The Trial in the Outback, the Lindy Chamberlain story. Lindy Chamberlain made headlines in 1980 when she claimed a dingo had killed her nine-week-old baby. With little evidence, Lindy was convicted of murder and spent the next 30 years trying to prove her innocence. Start streaming your next obsession. Try Sundance Now for free for 30 days by going to sundancenow.com and use promo code CRIMETALK. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we are back and we are ready to get the docket going. It is jam-packed today. First, is the hunt for Brian Laundry over? Well, as they say in my business, you'll believe it when the check clears the bank. We don't want to speculate, but let's tell you what we do know so far, and we're not going to speculate. Well, Chris and Roberta Laundry, the parents of fugitive Brian Laundry, visited Florida's Environmental Park early this morning, where allegedly an officer told the parents that law enforcement, quote, might have found something. Now, the Laundries have claimed their son went to this environmental park on September 13th, the day that he was last seen. Well, this morning, they left their home just before 7:15 a.m. to go to the environmental park. Two men in hiking gear, according to at least one who identified himself as a law enforcement officer, began trailing behind the Laundries. The Laundries and one of the men appeared to discuss a discovery before the parents left the park. Now, the park has been closed to the media and to the public, but there's some video that shows the Laundry and the law enforcement officer huddling for a few minutes and speaking as the officer appears to show the couple something. The officer appeared to tell the parents, I think we may have found something. You be the judge if that's what they're saying. Chris Laundry is seen in the video moving in and out of the areas of brush, and after a while, he and Roberta Laundry separated, and Chris and the two men moving into the brush on the left side of the trail for approximately 12 minutes. Chris returned without law enforcement, and the couple continued on. Now, the Laundries later discovered a white bag and a dark-colored object after traveling through a patch of brambles at the edge of the brush at a clearing. They could be seen putting the object into a bag and handing it over to law enforcement officers shortly thereafter, who took it from them. On their way out of the park, the couple made a phone call and then received a phone call. They were later joined then by law enforcement officers who could be seen patting Chris Laundrie's shoulder as he huddled up with the couple. Now, the couple left the environmental park at 8:45 a.m. and returned to their home shortly. Now, the attorney, Bertolino, for the family, said articles belonging to Brian were found on a trail but did not provide any further information, and the Sarasota County Medical Examiner's Office has now been called to the North Park. We'll have to wait and see what that means because, frankly, there are a lot of people that have been found in the hunt for Brian Laundrie. We'll talk about that in a minute. Now, yesterday, we also brought you the video of a man who resembled Brian Laundrie, and he was struggling to ride a bike on a remote county road in Florida. Well, now the police were called to the scene where the abandoned bike was found, just a few miles from where the video was taken. A former auto worker named John Hernando tells the police that the bike behind his shop, where he believes it was left there either Friday night or Saturday morning. John called the cops, who came to the scene and fingerprinted the bike on Tuesday. John says officers only spent about 15 minutes on the scene and told him Laundrie tips come in quite frequently to their department and most are in fact dead ends. The location of the bike is interesting, but it was noted that the design of the two bikes appear to be different. But nonetheless, the abandoned bike was suspicious enough for cops to come out. They have to follow up all the leads, even if they're bogus. Now, as I said, a lot of bodies have been found. So far, five bodies have been found in the hunt for Brian Laundrie. Just shows you, ladies and gentlemen, a lot of bad things going on out there in the world, and it's easy to dispose of these bodies. I'm telling you, it's crazy. As you may recall, first they found the newlywed couple, Kylan Schulte and Crystal Turner's body. They were found in Moab, Utah in August. They were last seen reported, you know, by the creepy guy that came near their campsite, and they were both found deceased. The case, some people tried to link the case to the Laundrie, but the police said completely unconnected. Then in Wyoming, the body of Robert Lowry was found near the Black Canyon Trail in the Teton National Forest last week. Investigators said that the Texas man had taken his own life. Then we had Jose Calderon. He was found stabbed to death in Blowing Rock, North Carolina at the Blue Ridge Parkway. The National Park Service, along with the North Carolina State Bureau of Investigations, are investigating the incident. And then the most recent development is a body found of that of Sarah Bayard, 55. She was found deceased in El Paso County, Colorado, off of Highway 83 and North Piney Parkway in Douglas County. The area is close to where Laundrie and his girlfriend, Gabby Petito, shared Instagram photos. So, you know, it's good that people are out there looking, and it's good that, you know, at least some families are going to have closure. But man, it just makes you wonder, all these bodies out there. Imagine all the ones that we haven't found. Crazy stuff. We'll continue to bring you the latest news on the Brian Laundrie hunt as it continues. We'll just have to wait and see. You just never know how these things are going to turn out. Next on the docket, Barry Morphew goes on the offensive. Barry Morphew, through a new set of attorneys, civil attorneys, filed a notice of intent to sue the prosecutors, the investigators that are handling his case. Why would you say, what cause of action could they possibly have against the investigators and the prosecutors? Well, the defense is saying that the prosecution was aware of and basically withheld exculpatory information, and they didn't release it to them until after the preliminary hearing. Now, I remember mention at the preliminary hearing about some DNA that was found inside the glove box of Suzanne Morphew. It was a mixture and not a whole lot was gone into it. I think there were some questions about whether some leads were followed and that was it. Well, it turns out apparently the prosecution may have had some information and hadn't turned it over. Well, you can't do that. And there's actually a new law here in Colorado that basically allows you to sue public employees, and they're both official and individual capacity, when you commit violations of constitutional rights, right? The prosecution has a duty to turn over all evidence, even if it doesn't help them. Now, could this also be related to the fact that the lead prosecutor on the case was suddenly leaving rather abruptly? Was it because he was aware of it, didn't turn it over, or he became aware that somebody was aware of it and turned it over? Needless to say, he's leaving. Now, no actual lawsuit has been filed. It's just simply a notice of intent to sue, which is required before you sue any public officials or governmental agencies in the state. It basically gives them notice so that, you know, items aren't destroyed, witnesses are preserved. It's basically like a preservation letter for everybody. But it clearly shows that Barry Morphew and his attorneys are going on the offensive. And what was this evidence, you might ask? Well, it appears that the DNA evidence that was found in the glove box of Suzanne Morphew just happens to be that of a convicted felon who'd served time in prison, and his DNA came up in the CODIS hit. That's the DNA database for all the convicted felons. And guess what? He apparently is a registered sex offender and actually served time as a sex offender. But the prosecution didn't do anything about that, didn't follow that lead, apparently. And that was sort of the general theme throughout the preliminary hearing. And it's quite evident when you read the affidavit for the arrest warrant in the Barry Morphew matter, is that the police decided that Barry Morphew was their guy, the suspect, and they literally built a case to convict Barry Morphew. Well, guess what? Good police officers don't pick a defendant and then build a case around them. They follow the leads wherever they may go. That's what a good detective is supposed to do. Doesn't have a dog in the fight, just simply seeks the truth. But when it looks like you're focusing on one individual and ignoring other evidence, well, it's not helping the case for the prosecution, which, in my humble opinion, was already weak. All right, next on the docket, the case of Larry Migliette. And I think we got that name right, but I've heard it pronounced about four different ways, and his wife spells his name Maya, M-A-Y-A, but it's pronounced May. So, I know sometimes we mess up the names, but we're trying to get it right. So if I mess it up, let me know. We're doing our best, okay? So Larry Migliette has been arrested on suspicion of murder regarding the disappearance of his wife, May Migliette, a Chula Vista mother of three who was reported missing 9 months ago back on January 7th. Maya vanished. She was 39 years old from her home in Los Gatos in Chula Vista. Her husband was the only person ever to be named as a person of interest. Shocking. Now, May vanished on January 7th of 2021 after a video chatting with friends and getting into an argument with her husband, Larry. The missing woman's sister said she disappeared the same day she scheduled an appointment with a divorce lawyer. Larry, the husband, originally alleged and said that they had gotten into a fight, he and his wife, and that she locked herself in a bedroom. She was reported missing on January 9th after her family learned she was not in her bedroom, as her husband has previously claimed. The missing woman's identification card, credit card, and phone also remain unaccounted for. Her credit card has not been used since her disappearance, and her phone goes straight to voicemail. Authorities accused Larry Migliette of having an illegal assault weapon, basically an unregistered firearm in California, and the arrest documents also stated that he purchased a firearm after a search warrant was executed at his Chula Vista home where police seized two guns. Now, allegedly, he refused to tell police who he gave the newly purchased gun to. Police reportedly also conducted a search warrant of Larry Migliette's uncle's home where they also seized two unregistered assault weapons. So Larry Migliette was said to be helping with the search, but he eventually stopped cooperating with police, retained a lawyer, and stopped attending vigils. Now, the Chula Vista Police Department's SWAT team arrested Larry at 11:42 a.m. on Tuesday as he was home alone. He was booked into jail without bail on two felony counts, including murder charge and the possession of the assault weapon. Now, the district attorney, Summer Stephen, said, according to police, Chief Roxanna Kennedy, during the nine-month investigation, detectives wrote over 67 search warrants, conducted 87 interviews, and looked into 130 tips. DA Stephen said her office filed a criminal case in San Diego Superior Court on Monday, charging Larry Miliete with murder. She said the case was filed based upon evidence developed during the extensive investigation. She confirmed May's body is still missing. Now, Stephen said in the press conference, California law, and similar to states across the country, it's very clear that we can file murder charges despite not having a body. In fact, the law is so crystal clear that we cannot let someone murder someone and gain the benefit by hiding the body in a way that we can't discover it. In fact, there is case law that we'll be using in this case that makes it even more clear that a missing body is circumstantial evidence that there was foul play and that it's murder because somebody who takes their own life cannot hide their own body. So Larry Miliete is scheduled for an arraignment on Thursday at 1:30 p.m. You can anticipate pleas of not guilty, no doubt. Now, the other thing that's rather interesting is, yes, certainly the district attorney can file a case without a body, but we know that sometimes that gets a little more difficult. It just depends on the circumstances. So you really have to be certain that your other evidence is going to be absolutely overwhelming to the jury. We'll see how things turn out. Next on the docket, you know how I love it when politicians get in trouble, regardless of either party. Well, today it's Jeff Fortenberry. He's the next contestant to be indicted. He is a representative from Nebraska. He is a Republican. And on Tuesday, he was indicted by a federal grand jury in the Central District of California on charges that he lied to federal investigators and concealed information connected to illegal contributions made by a foreign national. Now, Fortenberry is charged in connection with a campaign donation by the Nigerian-born billionaire Gilbert Shaguri in 2016. Prosecutors allege that the $30,000 donation was funneled through other individuals and conduits because foreign nationals can't make contributions to federal election campaigns. That's right. You don't want foreign money in our campaigns. Illegal. Straightforward law. But let's face it, ladies and gentlemen, what is the campaign finance laws? What is that meant to do? It's nothing more than a illegal money laundering organization. And if anybody believes otherwise, well, I think they're a little naive, and we'll just have to wait and see. Now, obviously, it's illegal to funnel money through other individuals. The indictment was handed up to a judge in Los Angeles because that is where Fortenberry held a fundraiser, which resulted in the donations, according to the Department of Justice. Now, Shaguri, the donor, pumped $180,000 into various U.S. political races, according to the Department of Justice. Now, the foreign national was allowed to enter into a deferred prosecution agreement and paid a $1.8 million fine and agreed to cooperate with the feds. A deferred prosecution agreement is, well, you're not going to have any charges against you, but if you make a small donation, we'll, you know, and cooperate, then we'll forget about the whole thing. And, you know, can't have billionaires being arrested and charged and go to prison. Can't do that. Guess it helps to have money in the criminal justice process. I bet he has more than the lawmaker who apparently sold out for $30,000. It's kind of sad, don't you think? Well, the lawmaker claimed he didn't know anything about the donation when it occurred and that those who funneled the contributions were thankfully punished. Fortenberry said several years later, the FBI agents from California knocked on his door in Nebraska and asked him about the donations. Fortenberry said he had let the agents into his house and answered their questions. He said, "They've accused me of lying to them and are charging me with this. We're shocked. We're stunned. I feel so personally betrayed. We thought we were trying to help. And so now we will have to fight." Fortenberry added that the indictment was wrong on so many levels. He also said kind comments would be helpful. Now, the Department of Justice said Fortenberry spoke with a fundraising host known as Individual H, and when they're identified as Individual H, and when individuals are identified in court documents as Individual H, you can assume, well, they're cooperating. So this Individual H was spoken to by Fortenberry in the spring of 2018 about hosting yet another fundraiser. The description in the indictment continues that in June of 2018, the Individual H called and told the congressman multiple occasions that the Shiguri associate, who had entered into a deferred prosecution agreement with the prosecutors, had provided him with $30,000 cash to route to Fortenberry's campaign at the fundraiser. That's all according to the indictment. Now, Individual H allegedly told Fortenberry that the money, which was distributed to other individuals at the fundraiser, so the donations could be made under their names and avoid individual donor limits, probably didn't come from Gilbert Shiguri. Well, despite learning of the illegal campaign contributions, Fortenberry did not file an amended report with the Federal Elections Commission, according to the indictment. Fortenberry falsely told investigators that he was not aware that individuals involved in this illegal campaign contribution made any of these contributions at this 2016 fundraiser, and that he is not aware of any contributions to his campaign from a foreign national. Now, at a second interview on July 18, 2019 with investigators, Fortenberry allegedly made additional false statements, including denying he was aware of any illicit donations made during the 2016 fundraiser, denying that Individual H had told him that he had provided the $30,000 cash at the 2016 fundraiser, and stated he would have been horrified to learn about such illegal conduct. Absolutely. During the second interview, Fortenberry also allegedly, misleadingly, stated he ended the 2018 call with Individual H after a person made a concerning comment, when in fact Fortenberry continued to ask Individual H to host another fundraiser. Now, Fortenberry is accused of one count of scheming to falsify and conceal material facts of two counts of making false statements to federal investigators. These charges are felonies and punishable up to 5 years in prison on each count. Wow, there's so much that could be said about this particular case. Obviously, politicians, money equals corruption. Bottom line, it is. Both parties, all guilty. Bottom line. We'll obviously give the good congressman the presumption of the innocence in this case, but you have to think. The prosecutors have a cooperating witness who says that he communicated with the congressman saying, this is how the money's going to be distributed, this $30,000 cash. We're going to hand it out to other individuals in probably $25 increments, which is the campaign limit for each individual. So we'll just have them make those cash donations. How convenient. We've funneled the money there. Perfect. And then the congressman allegedly knows about it and then just lies about it. Rule of thumb, ladies and gentlemen. When the FBI comes a knocking, or anybody else comes a knocking, and they say, we'd like to talk to you about a potential crime. Well, you know, you first may want to ask, am I a target or am I just a witness? Okay. Witnesses don't have to talk, and if you're a target, you certainly don't have to talk. Bottom line, simple, right? But everybody talks because everybody thinks they can talk their way out of it. Everyone thinks, well, I'm just going to talk and see what's going on. Anything you say can will be used against you. Everybody thinks it's only when you're in custody and you're being interrogated and they have to advise you of your Miranda rights. No. How many times do I have to say it? Anything you say can and will be used against you. Nobody ever listens to their local, lovable, friendly criminal defense attorney. They just simply don't believe it. Rule of thumb, ladies and gentlemen, best legal advice you're ever going to hear. If the feds come knocking or anybody else comes talking, you say, you know what? Lawyer, 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 okay? Because you have two options when the police come knocking. One, keep quiet, which is usually the best thing to do to figure out what the hell is going on. And then you have your attorney do your talking. And second, you tell the absolute truth. Because if you lie, guess what? You're going to be charged. And it would have been a lot easier for this Congressman Fortenberry to just keep his mouth shut. He probably wouldn't be charged because you know what he's not charged with? The actual money laundering. Interesting. It's the lying. It's always the lie. Okay, R. Kelly, he's a fighter. Absolutely. Getting ready for round two. Well, R. Kelly's trial has been rescheduled to begin on August 1st of 2022. His trial was originally set back in April 27th of 2020 in Chicago, but that had been delayed multiple times, both due to the pandemic and Kelly's separate trial in Brooklyn, New York, in federal court that didn't go so well. That trial ended September 27th with Kelly being found guilty of racketeering and sex trafficking, and he faces potentially decades in prison when he is sentenced on May 4th of 2022. Well, Kelly was federally indicted in Illinois in July of 2019. The 13-count indictment charges Kelly with producing, receiving inappropriate pictures of minors and enticing minors to engage in criminal sexual activity. He's also charged with conspiring to intimidate victims and concealing evidence, including the fact that investigators led to the 2008 trial where he was ultimately acquitted. He's pled not guilty to all the charges. Certainly, we're going to give him the presumption of innocence. Wow, I guess I wonder how much 404B evidence from New York is going to come in. Yeah, R. Kelly needs to get comfortable. He is going to prison for a long, long time. Next on the docket, Nicholas Cruz. Remember that name? He's the Parkland shooter. We brought you the story on Monday that it was anticipated that he was going to enter pleas of guilty. In fact, 17 counts of guilty of murder. Well, he did it this morning. Guess what, though? Still going to have to go in front of a jury, and they're going to decide whether he deserves to live or whether he deserves to die. He gave a brief statement today, which is basically, hey, I'm really sorry, and I've wanted to end it all myself, but I powered through it and want to thank everybody and apologize to the families of the victims. A jury will decide his fate. Good mitigation. It wasn't a whodunit. They can get up and say he pled guilty, accepts responsibility, he's young, he's made stupid errors, whatever. But the jury's going to have a tough decision to make there. Some people say maybe it's not so tough. What do you think? Let me know in the comments below. All right, next on the docket, a babysitter. That's right. Wait until you hear this. A babysitter kills the mother. A Pennsylvania man by the name of Lavarius Watson has been arrested after he allegedly shared a marijuana cookie with the mother of the child that he was babysitting, and then he stabbed her to death. Now, Watson was taken into custody on Saturday and charged with one count of criminal homicide in regards to the killing death of Elizabeth Bennett Leonard. She was 41. Now, authorities responded to the home following reports of a domestic disturbance just after midnight on Saturday. Upon arrival, they found Leonard dead at the scene with obvious traumatic injuries. Now, Watson told investigators that he had been hired as a babysitter for Leonard's children and that at one point the two adults shared a marijuana cookie. He says that he allegedly had an adverse reaction to the marijuana and remembered pulling a knife from a kitchen drawer before stabbing Leonard in the stomach approximately five times. Not good. That's murder after deliberation. Once, it's an accident. Two, three, four, five times after deliberation, ladies and gentlemen. Remember that. Now, according to the criminal complaint, Leonard's 10-year-old child was at the home at the time of the stabbing. Police wrote in their reports that Watson was audibly crying when he called 911 to inform emergency personnel that he had stabbed Leonard. When police arrived on the scene, allegedly Watson was covered in blood and was muttering, "Why did I do that?" Watson is currently being held at the Luzerne County Prison without bail, and he's scheduled to appear in court on October 28th for a preliminary hearing. That'll more than likely be continued, and there'll probably be some psychiatric exams completed. All right, next on the docket, our dumb criminal contestant of the day. Once again, another Florida man. What is it with Florida? Is there something in the water? I mean, the only thing more dangerous than maybe, I don't know, a married woman relocating to the state of Colorado is anyone near a Florida guy in Florida? I just don't know. So William Rodriguez, 28, has been arrested after an incident at Waffle House. Okay, and if anyone's ever been to the South, you know that you can find a Waffle House on just about every corner, right? It's kind of like the Starbucks of the South. And I've got to admit, I love Waffle House. They have the best hash browns in the world with a little cheese, a little onion on there. Phew, can't go wrong. Can't upset your stomach, but man, they taste good before it hits the stomach. That's for sure. All right, what did the suspect do at the Waffle House? Well, apparently he was allegedly high and drunk. He used his finger in the shape of a gun to steal some napkins, according to witnesses. Now, Rodriguez yelled, "Get on the ground. You're all getting robbed." He didn't appear to have a weapon. Apparently, it's quite obvious that it was just his finger in the shape of a gun. Well, Rodriguez has been booked in the Madison County Jail, charged with unarmed robbery and assault. That's right. For robbery. For napkins that they would have given him had he, frankly, not even asked. But when you threaten people with force and a potential finger, a simulated weapon, guess what? That gets you charged, going to potentially prison. Mr. Rodriguez, Edward William Rodriguez, you are a dumb criminal contestant of the day. Congratulations. All right, ladies and gentlemen, I got to head out. Going to head over to Crime Talk 1, go see a client. When you absolutely, positively got to see a client before court, you got to jump in Crime Talk 1. Saves you 4 hours of driving when you can be there in 1 hour. Have a great day. We'll see you tomorrow on Crime Talk.